Welcome to another bonus episode of Stone Cold Shows. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palolo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Palolo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the Astros' home goes from the juice box to an ice box. The league is waiting for one player to make up his mind. Altuve makes some hardware history. To brag or not to brag, but it does brag the question, which team will brag the bank for Alex? I promise that's the last pun from me this episode. Gents, news came down this week that Minute Maid Park is no more. It will be known as Daikin Park. Daikin is a global manufacturer based in Osaka, Japan that specializes in air conditioning. Now, there are a few names that could have been more ironic than Daikin, which was, I don't know, maybe waste management comes to mind. It's easy jokes, but an AC company sponsoring a ballpark that is notoriously warm is pretty funny too. Charlie, you were there at the ballpark for the presser. We're not going to spend too much time on this, but I did want to get your thoughts though. Do you think Jim Crane's thinking here is more strategic than just a brand sponsor for the stadium?
Not really. This is a money play. Minute Maid wanted out. It vacated Houston as its headquarters 3-4 years ago, and the Astros were getting under market money from Minute Maid, right? The transition from Enron, Minute Maid basically picked up the contract, had 28 years left, roughly $3.5 million per year. The Astros and Daikin didn't announce the money terms, but a 15-year deal, a good guess is $10 to $12 million per season. The Rangers' new ballpark, Globe Life's putting in 11 there as just one measuring stick. So it's more money. Two semi, at least, snarky things that came to mind, piggybacking the first of yours there, Brandon. Yes, it'd be nice if Daikin not already servicing Minute Maid Park. That would seem inevitable. Emphasis especially on functioning AC that serves the upper deck. And two, you know, if you're a fan, whatever, whoever your naming rights are, Minute Maid grew kind of kitschy. Daikin Park has nothing terribly exciting to it. Unless generations of Sasakis are Daikin stockholders and beholden to all products Daikin. But that would seem a bit hopeful, referencing Roki Sasaki, the Japanese free agent pitcher who presumably does not have the Astros on his radar.
Yeah, for me, it's just a cash grab. They're going to get more money. If I don't particularly care for the name. I don't hate it. Minute Maid Park actually makes a lot more sense, especially with the colors of the team. And it just all ties together beautifully when we had the juice box. But we've seen it going this way for years with stadium names, just, you know, corporations slapping their logos on them and you know, teams taking the money. And especially in baseball where money's not as easy to find as in the NFL. I get it. If this means the Astros have more in their war chest to bring back some of the players we would like to see stay in Houston, then I'm all for it. But yeah, I don't love the name, but you know, you take the money, you take the money. And that's kind of the trade-off you have there.
How much do those oranges in the back of the train car go for? Merch sells.
It does. I mean, I still see a lot of the old seats from the Astrodome being sold on Facebook Market. I wouldn't pay for a crappy old seat, but hey, nostalgia does sell. Hopefully there is some sort of tie-in here, or at least visibility-wise, with getting the Astros more visible within the Japanese market so that the future Japanese players coming out at least give a fleeting glance to Houston as a destination. Obviously, the big legacy markets will always have the leg up in those situations, but I think winning is the biggest key. So if they can continue to keep this window open, that will ultimately be the carrot to dangle in front of potential free agents. Speaking of this golden era that Houston has been in, quick shout out to Jose Altuve, who added to his Hall of Fame resume, garnering his 7th Silver Slugger Award, which gives him the most of any AL second baseman ever, and tied for Ryan Sandberg for the most by a second baseman in the entire league. Both players earning all their Silver Sluggers on the same team, Sandberg with the Cubs and Altuve with the Astros. Charlie, you mentioned you had some award-related thoughts. What you got?
Well, footnote or asterisk on the Silver Slugger Award. Altuve just remains a terrific player. There was an absolute drop-off from 22 and 23 to 24, but he's still the rightful winner. I mean, clearly the best offensive second baseman in the league, but it is an issue when performance tapers off from the top down, as well as your roster is not as good as it used to be from the bottom up, your overall depth. The asterisk is the Silver Slugger Award was not given out until 1980. Joe Morgan would have won more than seven. We go way back to a guy like Rogers Hornsby. He would have won more than seven. So it's since 1980 that Altuve now shares the all-time record among second basemen. And he remains a good bet to top that with number eight next year. I don't think currently there's another second baseman in the AL you'd take to outperform him in 2025. That said, Altuve belongs on zero Most Valuable Player Award ballots this year. The MVPs are named Thursday, and voters fill out 1 through 10. And barring an absurd vote, this will be the first time, excluding the short COVID season of 2020, first time since the Astros last sucked, that they're not going to have a player finish in the top five for MVP, right? Altuve was third just a year ago, or Yordan Alvarez has a couple of top five finishes. But from 2015 forward, when Dallas Keuchel in his Cy Young Award winning season actually finished fifth for MVP, Correa, Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Alvarez, last season Kyle Tucker, right, all with at least a fifth place finish or better within the last decade. This year, the Astros don't have anyone who belongs in that top five, which I think is reflective of the erosion of the team from great to good.
Speaking of tapering talent on the roster, the Bregman watch is ongoing. We anticipate no movement on that until Juan Soto makes his decision, and then the other dominoes will fall. Ken Rosenthal wrote about the case for Alex Bregman. He quotes Tim Britton, who projected Bregman will garner a 7-year, $189 million deal. But Rosenthal states the obvious, that Scott Boras is going to try to get more. He brings up the 11-year, $350 million Machado deal and the 6-year, $151 million Chapman deal. But he highlights Bregman's career OPS in the postseason at 789 and his leadership in the postseason as selling points for Boras to take to market. Dana Brown has said that re-signing Bregman is his top priority. But given the state of the Astros payroll and the state of their farm system, does that make Bregman more valuable to Houston or less?
I mean, for me, I think where this is headed is if they can get what they consider a reasonable deal for Bregman that the Astros are comfortable with, not one where they feel like they're overpaying. The Machado thing is ridiculous. They're not going to pay anywhere close to that. So if they can find something that they're okay with, I think Bregman could be back. But if not, I think this is a year where they roll with the young guys. They let all the salary fall off the books after this season. I mean, Dana Brown's just quoted about Zach DiCenzo. If he comes into camp and plays well, maybe first base will be his everyday job. I could see them maybe doing something like that at third with Whitcomb. They just go 1 year where they go younger. You still have Singleton over at first to platoon. It wouldn't surprise me because they're going to have a ton of money to spend after next season. If, you know, Fromber falls off the books, Tucker, Bregman would possibly already be gone for a year. Abreu comes off the books, Ryan Pressly, Rafael Montero, all those contracts come off. And then, so I could really see if the Astros don't quite get the deal they want for Bregman and they let him walk, I could see them wait a year to reload because they're going to have a lot of money to spend after this coming season.
You'd also have a pretty crappy major league roster from which you're building at the end of 2025 if Bregman leaves. And then Tucker's gone and Fromber's gone. Yeah, you'd have a whole bunch of money to spend, but you need to spend a whole bunch and then more, given your farm system is not on the cusp of producing a new wave of excellent major league talent. I think in Bregman's case, Boras' probable true goal, because Josh is right, the Machado comparison is absurd. Just because someone else signs an idiotic contract doesn't oblige you to match it or come close to it. I think a contract that starts with a two, if they can get to the $200 million plus, Boras wins, can claim victory. Bregman obviously gets the huge payoff. Jim Crane at the Monday naming rights event did speak a little bit with the baseball media after that. And, you know, he didn't give any absolutes, but he made clear that their concept, their view that the long-term contracts generally are dumb and don't work out well remains their position. Now, there can always be an exception, but you're only going to stretch that rubber band so far, be it for Alex Bregman, who's been a wonderful player. He's a legacy Astro. You're not Mike Schmidt. It's not like he's one of the greatest third basemen of all time. and he was last an All-Star 5 seasons ago, much less an MVP candidate. So everything has its price. The Crane has talked to Boras only once so far this offseason. Not a big deal. We're inside 3 weeks now to the winter meetings where the cash probably really starts flying around December 8th through the 11th up in Dallas, site of this year's winter meetings.
Chandler Rome wrote last week about the possibilities outside of Bregman for Houston. He did mention the young players, which we've covered on this channel pretty extensively. He also included some stopgap solutions like Paul DeJong, Gio Urshela, Moncada, Jose Iglesias. For those listening, Charlie is covering his ears and wincing. There are some more long-term solutions that he talked about that could happen via trade for players like Nolan Arenado or Alec Bohm. Arenado, much more costly than Bohm. Bohm's still under his rookie contract, so he's still arbitration eligible. The Cards, as he mentions, could pay down Arenado's contract, but they would expect higher level prospects in return. I think currently Arenado's deal is $30 million per for the rest of his deal. Houston doesn't have any top level prospects, according to a rival scout that Rome quotes in the article. Absorbing the rest of Arenado's deal would put them well above that CBT threshold. John Morosi also came out a couple days ago, talked about how the Astros have expressed interest in Brewers shortstop Willy Adames with the idea of moving him from short to third. I want to go back to Chandler's article for just a second. He posed an interesting question I think is interesting that's applicable to really any speculation in regards to bringing in a big ticket player on the infield. Does it make sense to shell out that kind of money that puts them into, you know, above and beyond the CBT? Does that make sense to bring in someone else and not pay one of the faces of Houston's golden era?
With few exceptions and caveats attached, no. Arenado, for instance, he's 3 years, roughly $75 million. I mean, the Colorado Rockies are paying the Cardinals $5 million a year for Arenado, who the last 2 years has been a colossally mediocre player. 3 years left on his contract, about to turn 34 years old. And Arenado, who's probably a Hall of Fame third baseman, a greater career than Bregman to this point, right? Bregman won 6, 7 years. That takes him into the age where Arenado has really fallen off dramatically. Still a good glove man, but his offensive numbers, while genuinely very good, they were always inflated playing in Colorado. So Arenado would not excite me whatsoever. Willy Adames on the market, to go specifically on a player. 2023, he was 2024, he was very good. But the fact that he drove in 112 runs, well, he was playing every day, hitting in the middle of a pretty good Milwaukee lineup. You're going to have all kinds of RBI opportunities. But he was good, but it's not like he was an OPS 900 guy, nor has he ever been. He was roughly as good as Alex Bregman in 2024, all things told. So would you rather bring in Adames than Bregman? Willy Adames is a year and a half younger. If you can get him for 5 years at $25 million per, as opposed to Bregman, a year and a half older, and you have to go to 7 years at $26 million plus per, that's where you have the real decision to make if you're Jim Crane and you're budgeting short-term, medium-term, and long-term. The reality is that barring an amazing trade surfacing, right? Alec Bohm would not qualify as amazing. The Astros' overall output at third base in 2025 figures to be no better if Adames, and perhaps worse, certainly if they go with the young internal options, meaning cheap temps, Whitcomb, DeCenzo, Moncada, we've talked about previously, if you wanted to take a flyer. That's just where it's at. Alex Bregman not as the Astros' third baseman in 2025 probably means for a worse Astros infield in 2025.
Yeah, I agree. And Adames, I'd be excited about it. Like Charlie points out, he's a good player, but he's not a guy where you're just like, oh, this guy. You know, it's not like Juan Soto or something like that. I mean, he's, like Charlie mentioned, he's kind of similar to Bregman here. And he's not like a huge name to where every Astros fan's going to throw a fit if they don't go sign him. That's just not going to happen. And their Astros fans are used to, you know, players walking. They'll be disappointed if Bregman leaves, but it's not like they haven't seen something like this before. So I just think it's a thing where Jim Crane just spoke with Chandler Rome. We want to try and field the best team we can without going crazy. I think going crazy means going back over that tax threshold. He said some of the payrolls are pretty high for the bigger teams, but I think we were the fifth highest payroll last year. That's the first time we've done that. We have the wherewithal to do it if we need to do it. So that doesn't sound like a guy that's out there trying to spend a bunch of money and bring in some talent. That sounds like he's kind of wants to maintain, and he knows, just like we do, they're going to be competitive in that division because the division's not that good. I think whether Bregman's here or not, I think they'll still be at least competitive in the division. And then I think, you know, maybe we really see a lot of movement, like I mentioned earlier, after this season, if they do indeed let all these guys walk. What's interesting, I saw another article maybe last week saying that they're talking to Bregman a little more seriously because it looks like the Kyle Tucker thing is just not going to be a contract they're going to be willing to pay. So maybe they can spend some of that money on Bregman if they are going to let Kyle Tucker walk after next year. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. But it doesn't sound like Jim Crane's just, you know, backing up the Brinks truck. And they're competitive every year. They can kind of pick their spots if they want to. They've earned that.
They're a little under $230 million at this point. The first tax threshold is $241. I think Jim Crane needs to accept. They're going over that. You're paying the repeater tax for 1 year. And then when the Abreu, Montero, if not traded, Presley money all melts off the payroll in 2025, you gain that flexibility. It'll take another year to get Lance McCullers off the dole. But what are you going to do there? You know, they're at about $230 million without Bregman, without Kikuchi. Or a replacement for either, and it's factoring projected salary arbitration increases for guys. If the goal is to clear the tax issues for this year for sub 241, there's a good chance they don't make the playoffs, or a bigger chance they don't make the playoffs. But they can viably take a tack in this division, subject to what Seattle does this offseason, subject to what Texas does this offseason, that we can bide our time and try to go on the cheap, and if it works out fine, so be it. Or we can take on the shorter-term, smaller payroll increase, a la Yusei Kikuchi, paying a third of a guy's salary by making a move or two by the deadline, late July.
Adamas in particular is interesting from an offensive side, but as a fielder, he had his worst defensive season ever last year, if you're measuring by defensive runs saved above average, in which he was minus 16. Which is of particular interest just because you have pitchers like Fromber and Hunter Brown who are ground ball pitchers. And so defense comes at a premium on the infield. One of the things that Rome tossed out there was maybe they go youth movement at third, which would give them flexibility to make moves at other positions. Do you guys just think it's more likely that they just go super conservative at every position this season to do what Josh is saying, which is just allow some of these money dominoes to fall, and then maybe that allows them some flexibility in trade and maybe to accommodate some higher contracts for 2025?
You know, that unofficial slogan, the Astros are inevitable within the American League West, they could sell themselves on that. When you look at the talent drain year to year to year to year, and well, they're back winning the division every year. Well, barely in 2023. You know, it didn't go down to the last weekend in 2024, but it's not as if they ran away with it. And it took Seattle falling apart for 2 months, right? They didn't win 90 games, much less make a run at 100. But if they want to, you know, by slashing the payroll where the Astros are, it doesn't mean they're suddenly acting like they're the Pirates. But if it's Singleton and a platoon partner, Caratini or Diaz at first, and at third, give it your best shot, Zach DeCenzo or Shea Whitcomb, or maybe Bryce Matthews has a huge first half at AAA. Are they really going to give McCormick and Myers everyday run as two-thirds of the outfield with Yordan probably earmarked for close to full-time DH duty? They could do all that and bank on healthier pitchers and internal depth and adapt as necessary within the season. I think they have one significant contract in them this offseason, be it Bregman or a pivot to Adamas or a trade for a guy like Alec Bohm, or maybe it's a starting pitcher. I just think it's unreasonable to think they could keep under $241 million all season and with a straight face say, we did all we could without going crazy to be a contender and win another division and hopefully get back to going at least one round deeper in the postseason.
Yeah, because you could make the argument that this team's going to age kind of quickly if you do lock up Bregman long term. And we've already seen Altuve starting to fall off a little bit. Yordan's not an older player, but he is a player where injuries are already starting to affect him. And you don't want to turn into that older team. You have Hunter Brown coming up, but I don't think they're going to hold on to Fromber either. I think, get ready, guys. This is going to be, I think, a lot of movement here in the next year or so. I think this team is going to look completely different, and that might be a good thing. Father Time's undefeated. You don't want a bunch of older players. I mean, Bregman's already a guy on the base path where you're just like, oh, don't take the extra base, Bregman. You know, he's not stealing bags anymore. Altuve's dropping off a little bit too. We've seen Altuve's defense fall off quite a bit. That's part of what happens when you age. So I don't have a problem with them trying to regroup here, maybe go a little bit younger and get real strategic to where you'll have this big pool of money and you can go fill some weaknesses on the team. That's going to be a lot of money falling off the books. But to Charlie's point, they got to keep some of these guys, right? You can't let everybody walk or you're not going to compete. But it is a weaker division. And we've seen Astros teams in 2019 that were maybe the most loaded teams we've ever seen in Houston. And they still didn't win a World Series. It's not always having the best roster from top to bottom that guarantees you championships.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the Diamondbacks were in the World Series just a year ago. We're going to find out real soon which one Jim Crane loves more, winning or money. He's done a lot of both. He's made a lot of both. He has two chips already for this team, which is more than most owners, tied for the Rockets locally. And those trophies are legacy championships decades in the past. In the modern era, Jim Crane is the best owner in Houston sports. So he might consider his legacy written already. He has nothing left to prove here. We have to wait and see whether he's going to really go out on a limb and back up his words by saying as long as he owns the team, they're going to be in it to win it, and how much he takes his foot off the gas because just from a financial standpoint, it makes more sense to. My pragmatic side is okay with that. But my fan side and the side that has to create content weekly for a podcast for the Astros, you obviously want them to be more competitive than just a team, but that's what they were for most of this season, was just a team. It was entertaining, but when they got into the postseason, how many of us really thought that they had a chance? I mean, we were all thinking like, okay, you know, they have a puncher's chance because we've seen them do it before. But when they got in the postseason, all those same ghosts that haunted them for the entirety of the season, all the way back to the beginning of the season, all reared their ugly head. And that Astros magic, that usually the switch that flips in the postseason, just didn't happen this year. Could they flip it next year with a reduced team, you know, with a different looking team? Sure, they could. Maybe they catch lightning in a bottle with one of the young guys, but there's really no reason to think that. So we're going to have to wait and see. And as we all wait and see, we invite you to come back to this show as we discuss it. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you listen on podcasts on places like Apple or Spotify, do us a solid and give us a 5-star rating. That helps people find the podcast so that we can grow it and have other people listen just like you do. Charlie, Josh, and I will join you next week for our continued off-season coverage, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube. We'll have more content for you during the week, including a Texans Cowboys live post-game breakdown following Monday Night Football over on Sports Map Texans. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.